You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm talking with Stevie White.
I'm the co-host on Jackmate's Happy Hour podcast. I was Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm the perfect man, but if you're looking for someone who's good at games, go elsewhere. I'm a Norwich boy. I have a little farmer twang. I'm doing a very stupid fitness challenge. I understand that it's stupid. I've had enough DMs off people who think they understand exercise, but whoever went in obviously saw an opportunity, saw a bag and went, okay, let's have a quick look and ran out.
Hope you enjoyed this episode and be sure to follow for future episodes. It really does mean a lot. So without further ado, let's get to know Stevie White beyond the game. Welcome, Stevie. It's good to have you here.
Hello.
So this is one of the earlier episodes and I'm excited to have you here on board. We got the tech sorted from the last one, so anyone who's listening, hopefully it sounds a lot better now. But let's get started with talking about you. Tell me about gaming in your childhood.
Oh, I am an old man. So gaming for me started with the Sega Mega Drive. I was Sonic the Hedgehog was like my OG game. I love the game so much. Like even now, I think Sonic is... It's such a good game and it stood the test of time as well. It's still going now. Sonic Frontiers has just come out. I need to get that actually. But yeah, I think Sonic was like the first game that kind of got me, grabbed me and made me love gaming.
And then how did that change as you started to grow up and Sega started to unfortunately die a little bit?
I started getting more difficult games. So obviously Sonic's a very basic game. I'd say after Sonic, I started to kind of go into PlayStation would have been the next one. Crash Team Racing. PlayStation 1, Crash Team Racing was a big love of mine along with Crash Bandicoot games. I say more complicated there. They're not much harder than Sonic, but yeah, from Crash, I would have then gone into FIFA and those kind of games. This is football, actually. This is football 2002, 2003, I believe. So
I'm detecting a theme here, football and cars.
Yeah. And then my love for Rocket League went.
So that's sort of what brought us together was Rocket League, right? I DM'd you.
Slid into my DMs.
I slid into the DMs and then you went, oh, you like Rocket League too. Do you want to carry me?
You had like a really professional photo. So without sounding... can you swear on this? I don't know how you're quite innocent, aren't you?
I mean, I don't normally swear much.
If I wasn't going to say a bad swear word. I was going to call myself a knob. Does that count?
That's fine. Go for it. Yeah, that's fine.
Without sounding like one of those, I get quite a few like message requests on Instagram and stuff. So I like reading them, but like half the time, like I'll just get messages from people just saying, hi, I don't know what I meant to say to that. But then...
My favorite one is, can I ask you a question?
That's you already have. Yeah. But then yours popped up and I always see like, you always see the profile picture and yours just looked really professional. So I was like, oh, I wonder why he's got such a professional picture. And then I clicked on it and saw you were like Rocket League coach for Guild, I believe at the time. And then I was like, I'll reply to him. But I didn't reply. I think you asked me to go for a drink.
Yeah, because I think we're boot camping. I think we're boot camping in London. You did a little train Instagram story of like, oh, on my way to London. Oh, yeah. And then I thought, well, I'll slide a DM. I like the podcast and seems like a nice guy. Why not?
You proper slid in. And then I said, no, I hate London. I'm not going to spend any time here. But I've seen you're pretty good at Rocket League. Teach me the ways.
And then we played a bit of Rocket League, a bit of Among Us as well.
Yeah, we went for a long slog of Among Us.
Yeah, that was fun because that was when I was streaming it a lot as well. So I felt like I was smurfing in the Among Us lobby with you guys a little bit.
Yeah, a few of us weren't the best. I was all right, I think.
Yeah, you were solid. You were hard to read.
There were definitely a few people in there that just didn't really care that much, but they were happy to play.
There was the classic, okay, yes, it's me moments, you know, which we had quite a lot of.
Jack was really bad for that. I used to hate playing Among Us with Jack, mate. Because he'd do this thing where if you call it him, he'd go, yeah, all right then, just vote me. Like he wouldn't defend himself, but like he'd try and say it in a way to make you think, no, I'm not actually the imposter, but like you're like, well, you definitely are.
Yeah, then with Rocket League, we played a lot of that and now you're streaming quite a lot of Rocket League.
Yeah, I'm getting all right at Rocket League. It's hard to say that I'm good at Rocket League to you because in your mind, I'm not.
I mean, you're better than average.
But to the average player, I'm good. So yeah, it's a weird one. I've just hit Grand Champ,
which again is very solid. Like that's top 1% probably. I don't know the exact numbers, but
I'll take that. I'll take it.
And you've been streaming quite a lot on Twitch. But before we get onto what you're doing now, I think it's important that we get something settled here.
Okay.
What are your top five games of all time?
Top five of all time. Sonic the Hedgehog has to go in. Just has to go in.
Is that just the one that's just called Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah, the original. Sonic the Hedgehog, you couldn't even spin dash. Like you have to just run at everything and quickly press down so you'd roll. After that, top five of all time. I'll put Rocket League in there because it's the game I play more than anything else. Shall I throw a Call of Duty game in there? I really liked, it's not everyone's favorite, I liked Call of Duty Black Ops 2.
Okay.
I quite enjoyed playing it. Can't even speak. I do podcasts, but I'm rubbish with you. I liked it during uni. Like, it got me through quite a lot of bored times at home. So, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Is that three or four I've said?
That's three. Sonic, Rocket League, and Black Ops 2.
Crash Team Racing I'm going to throw in there.
Okay.
Because before they redid it, and released it again, I actually played it on PS1 again in my third year of uni and completed the whole game to 100%. So again, it's another university one.
When you go back and play games from your childhood as an adult, you realize how much you struggled was due to you being young and not being that capable. And I feel like I've gone back and played so many old games and it's just like Pokemon, right? Like they're considered much harder back in the day than they are now. But once you understand the game mechanics and the most effective tactics,
yeah,
easy.
Fairly easy. And that's what I'd put in as my last one. I'd go Pokemon.
Ooh.
Crystal,
the class game.
Yeah. I was going to say Rogue Shout, but I don't think it is. I think it's an incredible game. The last one I played before I kind of felt like I grew out of that kind of gameplay was Emerald, which I really liked as well.
Emerald was a great game. You're going for the third one in the series where it's kind of a bit more...
Yeah,
optimized.
Well, I played Diamond, but I then played Emerald as well. And then after that, I kind of felt like I started to lose the love for playing games that aren't online. Mm-hmm. So it went. I went heavy on FIFA, heavy on Call of Duty, and now obviously Rocket League. So if I'm not, even now, like I very rarely play a storyline game, and I'll very rarely play any form of game that doesn't involve me beating a random teenager in another part of the country.
Uh-huh. That's great satisfaction for you in Rocket League then. I think for you, yeah, the Pokemon Shout is a good one. I think you've chosen some good games there. I think the Crystal as a game is my favorite of the series, so I can agree with you there. I play Heart Gold and Soul Silver if I want to relive that, just because they're an optimized version of it that's a bit more fun, I guess, if you like the quality of graphics and things like that.
I tried to play Pokemon Shield because we got it for my son Isaac. And they have it so like you've got XP share on like all of your Pokemon now.
Yeah.
And it takes away the fun of grinding to train your Pokemon. It's like I could never use one of them, but as long as it's in my party, it's going to evolve. And I find that really strange. So
they had it so you could switch off a few times, but then they've made it now so it's mandatory. So yeah, there's definitely a contentious topic in the new Pokemon game. I think it will be out when this goes out already.
Scarlet and Violet.
Yeah. And I'll be interested to see whether they've changed that because a lot of the hardcores are like, at least let us turn it off and make it more challenging for ourselves.
But like, I remember I was playing Pokemon when I was a kid, like 5, 6, I'm pretty sure. So I was born in 1993. I don't know when it started, 1998 or something. But
95, I think. Oh, yeah. It shows in the intro, yeah.
Yeah, so I would have been playing it at 5 or 6 years old, and I never remember thinking it was impossible.
Yeah, so just you had to grind, right? Yeah. Like, if you wanted to get past the next bit and you weren't smart enough to do it, you just grind a few more levels and then
but you're willing to put those hours in then.
Yeah. Games used to be harder.
It's too easy now.
Yeah, so I guess that brings me on to the next question we ask all of our guests. I'm thinking about rating these as well and giving a leaderboard.
Okay.
You know, leaderboard's a classic podcast thing, but I feel like it might upset a few people because I want to get my guests to tell me their greatest gaming achievement.
Oh, see, it depends if I want to go classic. Like, I could go back to completing Pokemon Blue to the full 150 slash
complete the Pokedex.
So completing the Pokedex and the OG Pokemons. But I never did it after that one. Like I don't think I ever put enough into the game. Like I'd complete it, I'd get all the gym badges, defeat the Elite Four or whoever else. And then after that, I was like, I wouldn't do it. Most recently, as I've just said, I've hit Grand Champ. I'd say that's quite an achievement on Rocket League, as it's a game that I play quite often as well. But I'm going to say completing the Pokedex on an original Pokemon game. This is when you couldn't even get running shoes. It was slow. It was a slow game. You had to walk everywhere until you got the bike.
And you could trade with the little cable. Because you had to trade because some of the Pokemon were already on red.
Me and my brother would have red and blue and then we'd have to do it that way.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, that wire, I cherished it and I barely ever used it, but I'd always have it with all my stuff. Like one day I might find someone else who's as much of a nerd as me.
I'll get a friend.
Yeah. But that's a big achievement. I'm not trying to poo-poo your achievement here. I've completed the Pokedex on Generation 4 games, which is 493, I think.
But I've got other things to do. I've said something from when I was like a six-year-old. True. You're saying something you did last week.
Yeah.
That's different.
Okay, you got me there. Well, I'm not going to rate it, but I'm going to appreciate it because I'm a Pokemon fan, especially now I'm doing the commentary for the Pokemon. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I saw that. Well done.
Yeah, good fun. Good fun.
I saw the little clip of the balloon dropping in front of you.
Yeah, you just never know these things are going to happen.
So much excitement in cards.
I mean, it's like when in your podcast, you have those moments, you're like, we just couldn't ever plan that. And that was a beautiful moment that just went so perfect. It was the fact that it was slightly on camera. And when we were on camera as well, like we're not normally on camera. Most of the time you're off camera.
Yeah.
So the fact that it switched over at that time. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked here. So Pokedex is your greatest achievement. You didn't mention your Crash Bandicoot 100% again. That was something.
Yeah, but I mean, again, I feel like I did that when I was 21 years old. And I think it's not the most difficult game in the world.
So it's relative to the age at which you achieved it.
Yeah, like completing a Pokedex at 6, 7 years old or whatever is a big thing. But I think if I went back and did it on Red and Blue now, I just know that I could do it.
You just Google it.
I wouldn't
it as
feel
well.
Like it's an, yeah, exactly.
Just find out where they
the
are.
Walkthrough books and everything. I remember actually, this is an achievement. I remember memorizing the exact walkthrough. Is it Mount Moon? Is that what it was called? Mm-hmm. I remember memorizing without using Flash how to get through without ending up in any trouble.
I can't remember. Mount Moon's the one between the first and the second gym, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that one.
You needed Flash for that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the one that's between the third and the fourth gym. That's the harder one where it's a lot more complicated to get around.
Did that as well.
Sure you did. Yeah, you had a very malleable brain back then, whereas now you're a bit older, it's harder.
So much worse.
That's why maybe GC1 is the achievement. Now you're an old man hitting GC1.
I'll take that. My fingers aren't going to have the same dexterity. You've told me before that I'm too old to get good at Rocket League now.
Yeah, I said if you keep grinding 6 years ago, you might be a pro. So that's your gaming achievements, your childhood. Was there any other games that you feel like in your childhood that influenced who you are now in terms of what you do for a career or anything like that?
That's a big question. I think I'd say it's more the competitive side of me. So when I started to realize you could play games, it wasn't just online. Back then it would have been without being able to play online, it would have been FIFA would have been huge with playing against my friends and my brother. And it gave me that kind of competitive edge. And I hate losing, but also I hate losing enough that I want to learn to get good at something. So I don't necessarily grind. Like on Rocket League, I think I'm on 700 hours, which I don't think is drastically high for someone at Grand Champ 1. But I think it helped me get a bit of a natural ability in games early on.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think, especially a game like Rocket League, where it's very spatial awareness based. I think if you've been a gamer your whole life, you definitely have a bit of an advantage in it.
Yeah, it's a very hard game to just pick up. The amount of people that have said that they don't like the game, but in reality, it's just because you haven't put more than an hour into learning how to hit the ball.
That's the hard bit at the start, is it just hitting the ball?
I remember the first ever time I played it was we were going out on a night out in Bristol and my friend was like, oh, this new game's just come out on PlayStation and it's free to download. Let's play it. And we just played it as like pre-drinks. And any time the ball went higher than the ground, I'd be like, where on earth has the ball gone? I wouldn't have a clue what to do. So it's mad now to... I've never done the training or anything, so it's weird to think that I've just been doing it the whole time. And eventually I got to a point where I was like, oh, I can jump and hit the ball now. Oh, and then I can fly. And now I just need to start learning how to do good things like flip resets and stuff.
A long way off from that now.
Oh, wow.
No, I mean, you've definitely improved. Like, you went over to PC and you improved a lot there now that you're a streamer.
Yeah, I'd never joined the debate of what's better, Xbox, PlayStation, because I had an Xbox 360, then I had a PS4. Like, I jumped between them all. Loved games like Gears of War, actually. That was a big love of mine. And Halo 3.
And so, they're Xbox exclusive, right?
Yeah. So back then, they were my games. And then I went over to PlayStation when a new Call of Duty came out at the time. I think it might have been World at War or something like that. But it was... it's weird. It's so strange to think like how many hours I've put into something now, but never feel like I've properly tried. But I also want to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really frustrating me that I'm like, please make me better. That's why I replied to you. I was like, please make me better at gaming.
Well, you were about Champ 1 when we first started chatting.
High Diamond. So I've progressed. That's not drastically, though, is it?
No, you're now too good for me to play with you on my no boost account.
And yeah, but not good enough to play with you on a normal account.
On my main. So you're stuck in that. You've got to go alone phase now.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm better than your Nobu now, though. That was a frustration. That was a frustrating thing. It was annoying to think that you were good, the same level of gaming as me, without the main aspect of the game.
Yeah, so I had boost unbound on my controller, so I couldn't even do it if I wanted to.
Without boost, I'm nothing. I speed around and steal every boost.
I'm trying to think what that would be like in, say, a shooter game. It would be like not being able to, I don't know.
Only using your pistol.
Yeah. Every time you shoot, it only shoots once. You don't have the...
Yeah, like, no rapid fire.
No rapid fire. I don't know. There's something in there for someone out there to try and let us know what equivalent would be in other games.
Not being able to run.
Like, yeah,
a lot of if you had to walk everywhere in a shooting game, how difficult would that be to get away?
Yeah.
You're taking away movement from yourself in that game and a big part of it. Or not being able to climb. Like, you could run around, but you couldn't climb up on top of things.
Yeah, because I can still move fast without boost, but I can't fly, which is such a big aspect of the transition you've had now, where you've got into that everyone can fly part of Rocket League and it's no longer a grounded game.
No, the ball's in the air for most of the game now.
Yeah, well, Rocket League for you is your mainstream game. You started streaming, what's it, about a year and a half ago?
Yeah, just over a year and a half.
How's that been for you, being a streamer?
It's weird because I still don't, I still wouldn't class myself as a streamer. If someone asked what I do, first and foremost, I'd always say a podcast. So I'd say I'm the co-host on Jackmate's Happy Hour podcast, but I'd never say I'm a streamer, but I would say, oh, and I stream on Twitch. So it's a weird one, but I don't know if I'm fully into it yet. Like, I haven't been to TwitchCon or anything like that, and I don't really have many streamer friends.
Yeah, it's tough because I'm in a similar boat where I do stream on Twitch and it does well and everything like that, but I don't look at it as my job. It's sort of a thing to do in the gaps. It's like one of the many aspects of a job. And I feel like if it is your sole job, it's a scary place to be because it's so inconsistent, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm nowhere near the size of streamers who could actually... Like, I couldn't make it my sole income. So I guess it depends on the size. But it's also, how do you grow? Like, I'm doing so many things. Like, I come to London so often and stuff like that. And I find even taking a couple of days off streaming, you lose some of your audience. You've got to grow them back every time. So if I want to take a week off, I think any streamer who wants to take a week off might realize that when they come back, people aren't there because people's brains just go, I need something new now, and they'll find something new, and that something new might be better than you, and most something news are better than me. So
well, it depends on what they're looking for, right? If they're looking for a GC1 entertaining Rocket League streamer who gets a bit annoyed at their teammates, you're perfect.
I'm the perfect man. But if you're looking for someone who's good at games, go elsewhere.
And I guess that's the challenge you've got, is what is your niche? So on Happy Hour, you've mentioned that's your sort of primary profession of you're the co-host. And having spoken to you about it before, you've kind of nurtured the co-host role into your own style, where it's not as intense a host role. You kind of just input the everyday person's question every now and again, right?
Yeah, so that was kind of the role I was meant to take when we first started the podcast 4 years ago now. It was going to be a YouTube drama podcast, and it will be Jack mate, and I'm Alex. We'll talk about drama on the internet, and then Stevie would be there going, who's KSI? Obviously I knew who he was, but like, I'd be the one to ask the everyman's question. And now it's, even though we're now getting massive guests on and big celebrities and stuff, I'm still very much there to ask the questions that maybe the viewer might want to know. And I'll just kind of be there ticking, thinking, oh, this is interesting, but it probably doesn't matter. But what's this all about? So I might ask the odd stupid question, but I think it's what the audience will want to hear as well.
And you've had some crazy guests on there. You've had everything from massive internet celebrities all the way through to traditional celebrities, the ones that our parents would know.
Yeah.
And is there any highlights for you when you look back through the podcasts?
One of the first big guests was Ricky Gervais, which was a massive thing, because obviously I knew who he was going into it. So it was huge to be able to be in the presence of like such a big comedian, someone I'd seen his shows. Other than that, KSI, like I never got into YouTube when I was younger. I still don't watch it now, really, but everyone knew who KSI was. I had my friends quoting him at school, and he was maybe our third or fourth guest, which is ridiculous to think. And then since then, strangely, Liam Payne was a big one for me. Ex One Direction boy band member. He's gone on to say some weird things since he was on our podcast, but this is like a worldwide massive celebrity. Why on earth is he coming on our little podcast that we film in this little studio? But yeah, it's now at a point where I'm very much thinking, like, Jack could tell me, oh, we've got this guest, and I'll go, oh, okay. Like, it's so strange now that he could tell me most celebrities, and I'd be like, oh, well played for getting them.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my favourite podcasts. I've listened to it for a while now. And
thank you.
You're what, 300 and something episodes now?
Yeah, about 330, I want to say, as a guest.
And the crazy thing about it is it's changed so much, as you mentioned. It originally was the YouTube drama. And you said all these big guests, but guests aren't the biggest factor to your podcast anymore, is it?
No. The main part is what we call the main shows, which is weird when you think about it. Like, we can have an episode that went out last week, based on when this goes out, was Mark Noble, who's one of the most well-known footballers in the Premier League, played at West Ham his whole career. Like, this massive guest. So you'd think we could be like, that's our main show. And then we're going to also do this random show where we just take a topic and chat rubbish for 2 hours or an hour. And our main show, me, Jack, Robbie Knox, we have a super sub and Alfie Indra as well. And we have a slight topic. We'll have a few things pre-written, not jokes pre-written, but we'll have a few ideas of what we want to talk about pre-written. And then we just ramble for an hour. And for some reason, that seems to be what everyone loves. Like, the amount of messages we'll get saying that people prefer the main show to the guests, I find crazy.
Well, for me, when I'm looking at what Happy Hour I want to listen to, if I've left it for a few weeks or something, I will go straight to the main show before I go to the guests. Unless it's a guest that I really want to listen to.
Yeah.
But then the guest will be my second choice, which I think, like you said, is crazy, because the caliber of these guests is huge, but you guys have risen above that in a weird way of like, people want to hear you guys have a chat, and they've almost got that I'm just a mate in the room listening in on the conversation style, right?
Yeah, that's something we get quite a lot. Like, people will message, because we've got a Reddit forum now as well. Like, is that what they're called? I'm so bad at Reddit. Is it a forum?
I don't use much Reddit. I think it's just a Reddit.
A subreddit.
That's
so
the
one. We've got a subreddit, which is just like r/jackmate, but it's not Jackmate stuff. It's just Happy Hour stuff. And I think we've now got 20,000 people in there. And that's only been going a few months. And that's just where people go to say, like, they'll rate the most recent episode. They'll let us know what they think of it. We'll take on constructive criticism sometimes.
Like, Jack and Robbie need to give you a bit of a rest.
Yeah, sometimes, but that's fine. That's fine. But sometimes the only issue with that is sometimes the, like, criticism isn't constructive. It's just pure criticism. And it's like, we can't do anything if you're going to just say point blank an issue. You need to say what's bad about that issue. So we get the odd thing on there. Someone went on there the other day and said we all have rubbish beards.
Not much
irrelevant information,
especially like, in a podcast. Doesn't really matter that much.
No. But other than that, yeah, it's incredible that on there the amount of love for the main shows is ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that comes with being in the spotlight with a podcast. Weirdly, with a podcast, it's kind of different because people know your voice or know your, the association of you with other people.
Yeah.
And not necessarily know your face. Even though your clips do numbers on YouTube, people have seen you before. But I've been about in public with you, especially in Norwich, where it's a whole nother level. And you are very recognizable and very well known in public.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
How does that affect your daily life?
It's strange. On a normal day-to-day basis, it's fine. Like, it happens little bits here and there. Like, walking around Norwich, someone might go, oh, it's him. Or, like, the other day I was walking to Isaac to school and someone had headphones on and he was walking past and he just looked at me, but he saw I had Isaac, so he just looked at me and went, and just carried on walking, like, tapped his ear.
That's
and
mad.
Because he was listening to Happy Hour at that exact point when he walked past me, but on a day-to-day basis, absolutely fine. I'll get the odd DM at home, like once I'm home, being like, I saw you eating pizza here. And I'm like, that's a bit weird. Mm-hmm. Not a big fan of those ones. But nights out is another level. Like, obviously for Jack, it's like ridiculous. But for even for me on nights out, our main listener base is uni students, like 18 to 25 year olds. So you go on a night out anywhere that people are drinking, and it's like mayhem. I went to Bristol last weekend and like every few minutes I'd be speaking to someone new. But uh-huh. It's lovely. It's a ridiculous, like, it's a feeling that not many people will ever have. You've had it at Rocket League events and stuff like that, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so the advantage I have is when I go home, I'm just a normal person again. But the idea of that happening everywhere, it's quite overwhelming. And I guess you still don't understand to what extent it might go to.
Yeah, so at the moment, it's really not that bad. Like, I've been in London all day and no one's come up to me and bothered me. Like, as I said, I'm really not that much of something until people are drunk and they want to talk to me. But there's definitely a level above that might get a bit too much. But as things stand, I feel like it's just really nice. Like, I've never really had any bad situations. I haven't had anyone come up to me and say nasty things to me. Nasty.
But that's in person, right? What about the fact that you're constantly being judged online? How does that affect you?
I think I've learned to get better at it. When we first started Happy Hour and the clips would go up, the comments on there would really bother me. I'd read every single video. I tend to get more positive than negative anyway, but when we first started, any negative would really hit me. And then it got to a point where I've just stopped. I don't even read the comments now, but also because I'm such a staple of the show, I like to think. At first, it was very much like, oh, who's this guy? Why is this random guy on here? And now it's just like, oh, yeah, it's Stevie. Like, of course he's there. And I haven't seen too many negative messages more recently. You still get them. Someone said my accent was sickening the other day, which is just a ridiculous statement to make. They didn't even say it was my accent. They just got annoyed at the way I say things. But that's just because of where I was born. I'm a Norwich boy. I have a little farmer twang.
Uh-huh.
But some people you just can't please.
So with those comments, have any of them affected you in a way that have, you know, made you change your life? You know, like for me, when I read a lot of comments around, you know, my appearance or, you know, if it's about my analysis or something like that, it can make me very conscious of it, and it can sometimes put me in a bad mood, and sometimes about my morals as well. That's probably the worst one, is when people suggest, you know, like, oh, I'm only in it for this, or oh, you're a shill to the money or whatever it is, right? And then they don't understand the thought process behind a decision on the other side.
Yeah, it's such a varied, you get so many different variants of comments on things like that. So appearance wise I had a hair transplant, which was partially because I'd get fairly negative comments. I used to grow my hair in a way that I'd use the sides to hide how far back my hairline went. And then when I'd see comments like that, it obviously bothered me. And then I was in a very fortunate position that I was then offered to have one. So I jumped at the opportunity. I don't think it ever affected me enough that I would have sought out having it sorted. Like, I don't think anyone bothered me that much, but it definitely gets to you. Weight comments, like, especially when we used to have Doody Rhino on our podcast as one of the hosts, because we didn't look similar, but we both had dark hair and beards. People would compare us a lot. And then obviously I'd get the negative brunt of that. So that bothered me a bit. And obviously now I'm in a position where I'm trying to better myself in that way as well.
But do you want to explain what that is? Because people who know you and listen to your podcast will know, but you're doing a fitness challenge right now.
I'm doing a very stupid fitness challenge. I understand that it's stupid. I've had enough DMs off personal trainers and people who think they understand exercise to let me know how stupid it is. But I said, partially as a joke, but also as like a, if I do this, if I say it on here, I will do it. I said I could exercise for 100 days in a row, mm-hmm. every single day, no rest day. And today is day 64 and I've lost over a stone. So I'm doing it, and there's no way I'm not going to do it now either. Like, I can't get to this date and then think, well, that was good.
I mean, I saw you at the station and I instantly noticed it, because I haven't seen you in probably about 2-3 months, right?
Yeah.
So you started this challenge after the last time I saw you, and I can see the effect of the challenge. And so, you know, it's obviously working in that sense. As you mentioned, it's not the smartest way it depends on what your goals are, right? For you, the goal is to keep you going. Right?
Yeah, like, I'm not going to the gym and thinking, you know what, I'm going to lift 150 kilograms today and I'm not going to be able to move my back tomorrow. Like, I'm going there, like, one of my sessions could be 45 minutes on a cross trainer, which is the most low impact form of exercise. It's going to get my heart going. I'm going to sweat. I'm going to burn calories, but I will not ache the next day. Not a chance. Mm. But then some days I will, like, I might start lifting some heavier weights. And then the next day when I go in, I might just go on the cross trainer. So like, there's never been a day where I've gone in and thought, I can't move my legs today. Like, I can't do this today because I'm playing it safe, but I'm doing enough to lose the weight that I want to lose.
Yeah, and keep it up. We'll find out how that goes, because it's Christmas is the final.
It's the World Cup is going to be the issue. So the World Cup has started now, and that obviously, the longer England stay in, the more opportunities I'm going to have to drink, which will be a big thing for me, because I've only drank once in this whole challenge and I hated it. Like, the drink didn't react well with me. Like, I got drunk, but it, like, I started getting stitches because I hadn't touched fizzy drinks for 60 days. So mm-hmm. It's like, it really didn't go well with me. So now my brain's thinking, is there any point of drinking? Which is a weird thing that I never thought I'd want. That was never part of the plan. But water is my life at the moment, which is another strange part of the challenge. Never meant to be the thing. Now I just need to get my eating better. And then it's, what do I do when I complete the 100 days?
Do you just stop and
just go, oh, that was good.
Put it all back
put
on.
Put it all back on, yeah.
Yeah, well, the challenge as well is with your schedule of how you fit it in around coming to London and, you know, whether it's a happy hour filming day or whether it's like you did today where you came in for a guild show, you know, you've got to try and fit it in before you travel, which is tough.
Yeah, days like today aren't as bad. Like, I was at the gym today at 9 a.m. The days that get a little bit harder are more the ones where I might stay in London. And I don't go to a gym that is like, I don't go to a 24-hour gym. My gym opens at 6:30 a.m, closes at 10 p.m. So I have to go at specific times. But then when I'm in London, if I'm not near my gym, because it depends what hotel we're staying in, I then have to just go and look for another gym. So like, if I need to be at the happy hour studio at 9 a.m, I'm walking around London at 6 a.m. trying to find a random gym and then paying to go there. So they're the harder days. I've just been to Bristol for a weekend and I just got a hotel that had a gym in it. I was like, that's the easy solution here.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense. I think for me, I need to get back on the gym grind. I think I'll keep looking at your stories on Instagram, and one day I'll be like, right, today is the day I get back on it.
I'm going to start just sending you videos every day. Go to the gym, Greg.
Yeah, I need to. One last thing before we move on to what you're getting up to now. I had Ian on in the pilot, the first episode, friend of ours. My love. He seems to be a lot of people's loves. He's a very attractive man.
Yeah, it makes me sad.
Yeah.
Well, I'll never look like him.
Well, he was saying how weird it was being a guest on a podcast. And you've done a few podcasts where you've been the guest. How different does it feel when you're used to hosting?
I've only properly done one other than this. I've done a little bits for a couple of friends before, but nothing like proper other than What's Good with Randolph and Mini Mentor. Yeah, it is really strange in comparison because, well, there's one really good thing about it. I put no effort in, not whilst I'm here, but like I didn't have to come here prepared with anything. I didn't have to worry about how it was going to go. It's just, I'm just answering questions and I can talk well enough occasionally, stumble over my words, but like it's not exactly a difficult thing to just answer questions that are given to you unless the question is ridiculous, which is obviously something as a podcast host you wouldn't want to give. And if you are going to, you tend to let
wait
them
till the final question of the, pod, and then we'll see.
Then at the end, I'm going to go, "This is rubbish. Why am I here?" But other than that, yeah, I think it's nice. It's definitely a different level of comfort, though. Like it's with you, it's kind of fine because we're just friends anyway, so I don't have to worry too much. When I went to What's Good, it was a bit like I'd met Randolph and Simon before, but it was a bit like, "Oh, is this going to be natural? Is it going to be awkward?" But I had so many messages after that saying how much people enjoyed it, so I think I'm okay as a guest. I apologize if anyone watching this hates it.
Well, for you in the future, are you going to be doing much hosting, maybe in person, any shows, that kind of thing? Because I know for you, you do the guild shows and you've hosted various things and you're starting to build up that repertoire of non-podcast based events.
Yeah, I guess it's just trying to put yourself out there. I haven't actively tried to look for jobs with that just because I know how well Happy Hour's doing. Obviously, I've also got the contract with Guild. And then outside of those things, I need to do the streaming. So it's trying to find the time to do everything. And I believe last week we announced that Happy Hour is going on tour. So that's the biggest thing for us at the moment. So that's huge. And that's where my brain is currently fully focused on, because we're doing 12 venues over, I want to say, 16 days. And the smallest venues fits 800 people. The biggest venue fits 1,900. And that's in Bristol. So it's, yeah, we're doing Cardiff. We're doing Edinburgh. We're doing London, Shepherd's Bush Empire, which is mental. We're finishing in Norwich as like a welcome home thing. And it's, yeah, that's taken up all of my mentality at the moment. I'm just thinking, let's get this done. Let's plan something big, create a really good show that people want to enjoy. And I'm sure you'll come along and see it.
Oh, 100%. I'm very excited for that. And I think with the idea of a tour, it's been in the running for a while, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really weird. We've had so many ideas on Happy Hour where we've just said, you know what, we're going to do this. And it's just never kind of come into fruition. Like even merch, we've been doing Happy Hour for 4 years. We've never released a piece of merch. So
Jack has the problem of the moment he releases merch, there's going to be people commenting from the old days.
Jack's ruined merch for everyone. Like I couldn't even release my own if I wanted to. Not that anyone would want to buy it, but if I ever wanted to, it'd be under such scrutiny. Because if it's not that good, Jack would have to tell me. Because if not, people go, why aren't you telling your mate that his is bad, but you were happy to say this? So it's, yeah, it's a really weird one. But I hope we will do something at some point. And then, yeah, just if you're up for a tour of a potential absolute mess of a show, come and watch Happy Hour Live.
That's surely going to sell out almost instantly.
We've been very good people and kept the tickets quite cheap as well. We were asked how expensive we want to make them, and it basically boils down to the more expensive you make the tickets, the more money you're going to make. So this is how great we are. We thought that it didn't feel right. We looked at other podcasts, we saw how much they were selling their tickets for. They could sell them between £35-£40, and we went, that sounds great and a lot of money, so we've decided to do ours for £19.50, which is hurting my bank.
I mean, I guess for you guys, you just want to get it done and you don't want anyone to feel like they've been ripped off. So there's a little bit of like, well, let's just make sure it's good before we start charging lots of money.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have the mentality that we'd want to charge a lot of money either. I think we've always said on the show how we kind of want to treat things with Happy Hour. We wouldn't want to suddenly release like an £80 piece of merch either, even though obviously you pay for quality, but it just doesn't feel right. And especially at the moment, how the world is, it doesn't feel right to go, yeah, I know you're probably struggling and it's Christmas time and you want to buy presents for people, but why don't you also shell out £60 for an absolute mess of a show? I mean, it will be big. We will put so much effort into it and I know it would be a very good show, but it's still going to be happy hour, which sometimes the car crashes are the best parts of it.
The way you started that little sentiment off about it being cheap, it sort of reminded me of, you know, when people go on a date and they're like, so I'm a really nice and caring person. It did feel like you're trying to prove to people that you're nice, but it is a nice sentiment to have it at that price. So you can give as many happy hour fans a chance to come and enjoy it if they can get the tickets before they sell out, which they're probably sold out by the time this goes
out. Yeah, maybe that would be insane. I think in total there must be about 16,000 odd tickets on sale over the 12 venues. And we're covering the majority of the UK as well. Obviously, we're not going over to Ireland just because of logistics. Maybe one day we will do that. But we're doing, as I said, Cardiff, Edinburgh. We're doing Newcastle, Norwich, Cambridge, Reading, London, Guildford, randomly.
Uni students, isn't it?
Yeah, Southampton. Like we're covering a lot. Bristol, as I said. So it's... We're doing a lot there and hopefully it will sell out. It's a scary thought. Like, I think we're going to put on a good enough show that it should sell out, and we definitely have a listener base to sell it out as well. But you don't know until you put them on sale. And at the point of recording this right now, we haven't put them on sale yet. So you're getting a nice little first time talking about it.
Oh, well, very, very much thank you for that, because I'm sure the listeners on this will be rushing to the webpage to get their tickets. But anyway, we'll move on now. So you've got that going on right now. That's the future for you with Happy Hour. You got all your streaming, you got Guild stuff. You're a busy man, and especially with the 100 Days of Fitness, how do you juggle everything? You're also, you know, you've got a family that you look after as well, which I think is something people don't quite remember when they're watching you streaming or something, and like, oh, why aren't you streaming again today? You have a lot on your plate. Do you find it possible to juggle all that? Because I've always admired how much you do.
Yeah, so some weeks are really difficult. Like we're currently doing the 12 pods of Christmas for Happy Hour, which is we release a new guest episode every other day of December. So at the moment we release Mondays and Thursdays, main show, guest show, but we're essentially doing an advent calendar, first, third, fifth, seventh, and so on, a new guest every time. We've already filmed until the middle of December, but the way we've been doing that is by coming into London multiple times a week. So that, and then when I go home, I still need to stream as much as I would without going there. So trying to find the time can be difficult sometimes to then also just kind of have a normal life outside of it. But I've got a like a whiteboard on my fridge, and it has like every day of the week, Monday through to Sunday, and then lines. And I start at 6 a.m. and end at 9 p.m. And I just put in absolutely everything I'm doing hour by hour every single day. So like this right now was on at the bottom of my day because I put Guild on there and then scribbled it all out. But like it started with take Isaac to school, go to the gym, get straight on the train, come to London, go to Guild, then come over here, and then I'll be home at like midnight tonight. So it's like, yeah.
And then early tomorrow you'll be doing more stuff.
Back tomorrow, yeah, I'll be waking up, taking Isaac to school, straight to the gym, and then I'm going to stream all day. So it's, yeah, every day is pretty busy. But I'm starting to find more time by planning my streams a bit better with timing.
Have you always been the kind of person to work crazy hard?
Yeah, before I left my old job. So I worked in an optician's for 5 years, but we started Happy Hour in 2018, and I didn't leave that job until 2020. So I think that's when it started, whenever COVID. So I worked throughout all of COVID as well, because I was in an optician's. Obviously, we had to have people still had eyes, even though everyone was obviously getting this illness. So we'd still have to see patients all the time. But at that job, I used to work 9 a.m. till 8 p.m. So I'd do 11-hour shifts, but I'd do four a week rather than the five that others would do to hit my full-time hours. And then on my fifth day that I should then have off, I'd come into London to do Happy Hour. So that was constantly like, I was always just going to work, going to work, going to work, going to Happy Hour, going to work, going to work. Oh, I've got a day off. I'll probably go out with my mates and then back to work.
Well, I mean, it's one of the most admirable traits of anyone in this industry. And you look at them and everyone thinks, oh, they have it easy doing what they do. But you do work that extra bit harder than, because there's a lot of people who watch you on Happy Hour who won't have a clue about all the guild stuff.
Yeah.
There'll be people who watch you on any of those who don't have a clue about your family, people who don't know about you streaming. I think that's the thing. They look at you and they see you do two podcasts a week, like, oh, what a doss.
Well, yeah, we do two podcasts a week. We do them in one day as well. So in reality, normally, if it wasn't for the 12 pods, we only come to London once a week to do Happy Hour. But then it is all the other things outside of that. Like, I might come into London for Guild. But I think I'd get really bored if I wasn't constantly doing something. And my partner, Ariane, knows more than anyone that, like, if she's like, oh, let's have a lazy day today, after about an hour, I'm a bit like, can we have a lazy day where we go and do something? Like, I can't sit at home and do nothing. I'm really bad. Like, I don't even sit and watch TV anymore. I watch everything I watch, Netflix, Now TV, whatever I'm watching, I watch on my phone, either when I'm on a train or on the go, or whilst I'm doing the washing up or whilst I'm cooking. But I'll never sit in the living room and watch TV anymore.
I'm very much the same. I don't really stop to watch TV. The only time I do stop to watch things is when I'm in bed to try and wind down, because my brain is so overactive in the same way you said, where I just can't fall asleep. Like, for example, last night I was like, I should go to bed at 1, and then was up until 2:30 doing stuff for this podcast because I just was thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I just can't stop until it's done.
Yeah.
So it is quite a unique thing. But then equally, it's very easy to get in that lazy cycle. And part of the challenge, the 100-day challenge you've got going on, that keeps you on track and makes sure you don't miss a day.
Yeah, I think that's changed my mindset tremendously, because, like, before, I might take Isaac to school, get back to mine at 9 a.m. and maybe stream then, but I might finish stream for lunch and then for the rest of the day think, oh, I don't really need to do much. But now I'm planning my life around going to the gym, because I'm such a gym lad now. It's so weird talking about it, because, like, I'm not like, if you looked at me, no one would go, he's been to the gym 60 days in a row. But, like, it feels like uncomfortable to talk about, but it's obviously such a big part of my life at the moment. But every aspect of that, as I said, that whiteboard every single day has gym on it at some point, and it's trying to find where to squeeze 2 hours in, obviously going to and getting from the gym as well. But I think having that has also made me plan the rest of my day better as well. Whereas before I might have just gone, oh, maybe I could just sit and watch a bit of TV for a bit.
It's quite funny because my calendar also has gym in it every single day, but I have not gone to the gym in a good few months. And that's partly because of not being able to fit it in as an excuse of, oh, I'm working too hard, I can't fit it in. But realistically, there's always time. And like you said, that's where your mindset might have changed of, I have to do this, rather than, oh, I could go to the gym, that'd probably be good for me.
Yeah, that's a huge thing where I'd always think, I'd look at my day and just think, well, I need to do this at 9, and then I'm going to be doing this at 1, and then at 6 p.m. I'll probably be having tea, and I'll just be thinking, well, no, I can't go to the gym today. But then during this, if I need to be on a train at 9 a.m, Ariane will take Isaac to school and I'll be at the gym at 6:30 in the morning, and then I'll be on that train.
Lad.
Because I'm not going to have another chance. I'm not going to have another chance to go. So it's weird how much I didn't realize that I was making excuses for myself. And I think having that mentality has changed other aspects of my life as well, where, like, I started just streaming. I was streaming every day, but only 3 hours. And now I've started doing 5-6 hour streams again, because I've just realized, like, why am I not just doing it all here? And then I can use other parts of my day to do other things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good lesson in there for a lot of people at home, if they're listening, that just because you're not doing it doesn't mean you can't. It just means you haven't prioritized it in the right way. And I just wanted to touch on something before we close out here, because pretty wonderful story. Well, that's a harsh way to put it. It was a terrible story that turned wonderful, happened to you recently, around the switch incident.
Yeah, it's mad. So we went to Bristol. Me and my partner Ariane went to Bristol for a friend of mine's birthday. A friend of yours as well, Matt Brock. It was his birthday, and I used to live with him in Bristol. So he asked if I wanted to go back for his birthday. We travel back to Bristol. Isaac goes to my dad's for the weekend. Ariane recently got into a game called No Man's Sky. So she decided to take the Switch with her to Bristol so that she could play it on the 5-hour train journey. And then on the day we're leaving the hotel, we left the Switch in the hotel the whole time. We were only there for 2 nights. And as we were packing everything up, Ariane started to notice a few of her things had been moved, and she asked if I did it, and I was like, no. And then she realized the Switch had been stolen. So we told the hotel this, and they didn't do too much, annoyingly, but there's also not too much they can do. Reported it to the police. They called us and told us they've had to close the case because there's nothing they can do. They said even if a cleaner went in, even if they can find proof that a cleaner went into the room during our stay when we weren't there, there's nothing to say the cleaner took the switch, and they can't prove that. They can't prove that someone didn't quickly get in the room as the cleaners left. There's no way of saying someone didn't say to the cleaner, oh, that's my room, and just walk in, because they're not always going to check, are they? So obviously that was really upsetting. And then I wasn't really going to talk about it publicly. I was just like, oh, it's frustrating, but it is what it is. Ariane posted about it a bit, and then I was just really annoyed at night, and Isaac came home from my dad's, and we were like, how on earth are we going to tell him? Because he loves that switch. Like, he plays it all the time. And it was like, how do we tell a six-year-old that his game console has been stolen? And so we sit him down and we tell him. And like, as we even started to say it, his eyes started welling up, and I've never really seen him like properly cry. He doesn't ever cry about anything. So to see him get that upset about it was so rubbish. So then I was like, you know what, I'm tweeting about it just because I need to get it off my chest as well. And I tweeted something just along the lines of, Isaac's switch was stolen in Bristol. There's some awful people in the world. Mm-hmm. And Isaac's favorite YouTuber, Dan TDM, Minecraft YouTuber, replied to it saying how rubbish it is and just said, I'll buy him a new one. And we had so many lovely, lovely replies from people. I had generous offers from so many people basically just saying, oh, I don't use mine anymore. He can have that if he want, which is crazy to go from me thinking there's some rubbish people in the world to then going, actually, there's some class people in the world as well. There's so many nice people. But obviously, I replied to a lot of people and just said, look, we can't do that. We can't accept that. And then I spoke to Dan outside of that tweet, spoke to him in DMs, and I said to him, I was like, look, I didn't tweet this hoping someone would do this. It was just trying to get it off my chest, and I can't accept it. Like, I don't feel like I can accept it. And he basically just replied saying, yes, you can, what's your address? And I was like, okay. And I spoke to Ariane about it for a bit, and then we were like, okay, is it I don't know if it felt right to do. A lot of people, like, someone replied to my tweet going, it's not the end of the world. Just buy him a new one. Like, you're far better off than other people. And I was like, I do not have the money to buy a Nintendo Switch right now. I don't know. I think people just see people online and think they're minted. So I do not have the money for a Switch right now. But yeah, Dan TDM didn't even bat an eyelid at it. Just the loveliest guy. And the next day, a Nintendo Switch arrived at our house, the brand new OLED one, the white one.
I saw the clip. Even Isaac was excited over that.
It's so weird. He just opened it and went, oh, it's the OLED one. He posted it with a nice note as well, basically just saying that it's that he hopes that makes him happy. And yeah, I've never seen him so happy. And now he can go to school and brag that Dan TDM bought him his Switch, which is another whole separate thing you could never just give to someone. Mm-hmm. It's like you're like to someone who's listening who might not like YouTube. It's like your favorite celebrity buying you something, just anything. You'd be like, wow, why has this person done this for me?
Yeah, it's crazy as well with the timing for me, because I've just come back from a Pokemon event where I was commentating the trading card game. And one of the people I was commentating with knows Dan, and he was talking about how great he was because he went along to Pokemon Worlds to compete in it.
Yeah.
And being such a high profile person within a hall where everyone's just, walking around normally. Like, I went to Worlds and I walked past a couple of my favorite YouTubers there. It was just normal, right? Because it's the biggest Pokemon event of the year.
Yeah.
And he had people there, you know, like bouncers kind of vibe, or like, I guess security is a better way to describe. It was a security just making sure there was nothing going wrong around him. And he just said, look, it's fine. Everyone here is adults.
Yeah.
And I think what a lot of people forget with the higher profile internet celebrities, as we sort of spoken about here, is they are just normal people. And a lot of the time they're normal people who've come across money and want to do nice things with it.
Yeah.
But I think really the sweet bit of that is the little message and the fact that he did it so willingly and so quickly. I think that's really where the kindness comes across from Dan.
Yeah, like obviously he did it. When I messaged him, I was like, it's like I thanked him so much, but kind of on behalf of Isaac. But also it is such a big thing for me and Ariane, because now we don't have to worry. Like, our minds were going, okay, we'll have to get him a new Switch for Christmas. But then it's like, I'm giving him a Christmas present of something that we've lost. Obviously, it's not our fault either. It was stolen, but Like, it just didn't feel right, but I wouldn't have had the money to get him that and then also get him the presents I wanted to get him. So, like, he's saved me and Ariane such trouble there as well. But the biggest thing is for Isaac. And that note, actually, he left it on the table. And then I was just hiding up the living room and I picked up the note to put it near the switch. I've never seen him stress so much. Honestly, he was like, what are you doing with that note? And I was like, I'm just moving it near the switch. And he was like, oh, phew.
I thought you were about to say someone broke in and stole that as well.
They left the switch. I just went, oh, it's from Dan TDM, took the note.
Well, on the idea as well that someone had stolen something from your hotel room, I think it will sort of remind people that thievery is a thing, because you know, I had recently my phone was pinched from my hands when I was walking, had my headphones in, two or three guys cycled past, grabbed it and cycled away, and in my head that just didn't happen until it happened, and now I'm like, this is a thing I constantly have to think about in everyday life.
Yeah, I remember London especially. I remember when I was on the tubes, I used to wear Beats, like headphones over my head, and I saw a few videos online of people who would sit near the doors, like just listening to music, and then someone would just yank them off their head. And now my brain's always aware of that. But with a hotel room, I just never considered, like, the door's locked. People,
there's always a safe in there, and you think, well, you know, I get it, for maybe some like a passport or something.
If I'm staying for a long time, I'll put stuff in the safe as well. But as I said, we got there at midnight Friday night and we left at 11 a.m. Sunday. It's like it was one day really that we were there, and I just didn't even think about it. But just the thought, I think Ariane's struggling with it more than I am, because I'm just a bit like, yeah, it's annoying. But to her, it's a bit like someone's rummaged through her stuff, because none of my stuff had been gone through, because whoever went in obviously saw an opportunity, saw a bag and went, okay, let's have a quick look, and ran out. Mm. They didn't even look at my stuff, which is lucky, because I had Ariane's iPad in my bag. Mm. So it was lucky that I had that there. But yeah, I think she's been a bit like on edge now since. She said to me the other day, I came home from the gym and I came in the door and didn't shout up to her or anything, so I didn't know if she was asleep because it was first thing in the morning. And then later on when I spoke to her, she was like, oh, it's like got her on edge, so like she heard the door go, and then she's like, oh no, someone's here. But obviously she realized it was me. But it is a weird thought to know that someone had just gone through your personal belongings.
Yeah, well, I had that last hotel I stayed at, actually, for this Pokemon event. They said at the desk, oh, they won't do room service unless you request it. So in my head, I just left my room in a tip, because I was like, well, yeah, I'll be here for like 5 days. Yeah, I'll tidy it up when I leave and then it'll be fine. But they did it just without asking. And my passport was just on the side. And I thought, if that was gone, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
And like, that's something you'd put in a safe, right? That's something you'd normally put in a safe. But it did. And that was after seeing your tweet as well. So it did make me feel a bit more on edge. And as I mentioned, now that I hold my phone differently when I'm walking around, thanks to that incident.
Yeah.
So it does change your life. And I've met some people who are very paranoid about things being stolen or whatever. And now I've had that experience, it makes a lot of sense to me.
Because you say that, I got this purely because I'm on trains a lot. So I like to be able to watch films, but I've got a little loop on the back of my phone. So anywhere I walk, if I'm on my phone, I'll always have my finger through it. So if someone tries to steal it, they'll probably snap my finger, but they're not going to get very far with it. Because I remember you tweeted about having your phone stolen, didn't you?
Like, I was tweeting as it got stolen.
Yeah, little things like that have just put me on edge about it. So I'm always super cautious when I'm out and about now.
Yeah, well, we all learn from these interactions. And thankfully, due to your position, you know, you're very lucky to be able to learn from it. For me, I looked at it as like, well, I've still got myself, I've still got my friends, still got my family.
Yeah.
Buying a new phone, yes, it's money, but I'm in a lucky position where that's not such a bigger concern as it could be to someone else. Like,
yeah,
like you said, for you guys and your family, because you actually have to support people in your family, where I just look after myself.
But so you've got to do a lot for yourself.
So that's pretty much all we got time for, because I'm aware that, you know, you've done me a favor by sneaking in here on your way home. You're going to be home later now because of the fact you've stopped by. So I don't want to keep you any longer. And just before we leave, I do want to say how great it is to have you as a friend in my life, and how much I appreciate you coming on so early on in this podcast's journey, and to have you as a guest is amazing.
Well, I will happily come back anytime, as long as I've got time. Sorry, I haven't got that long today.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Been a busy day, but yeah, I enjoyed being here. Thanks for having me, and thanks for being my friend.
Do I do the classic, oh, it's been such a good conversation, but there's so much more we could talk about. It'd be great to have you back one day.
I'll just come back at some point. I won't give you a choice. I'll just walk in and go, come on then, let's do another one.
And it'll probably be the next episode if I can't find anyone. But before we end the show, I always ask the same question.
Oh, no. That's very, very Jack there.
No,
what's
we have
the meaning of life.
I guess what does gaming mean to you?
What does gaming mean to me? Gaming to me is a, I was going to say, sweet release. It's an escape. It's a point in which you don't need to think about anything else. If you're playing the right game, you're so focused on what you're doing that every other aspect of life almost feels irrelevant. Obviously, it doesn't mean that it is, but it's nice to be able to go into a whole other world and lose yourself, or just lose your mind at games like Rocket League. But yeah, as I said earlier on, like Ariane really got into No Man's Sky, and it's deep, but the reason she got into it is that her dad recently passed away, and in the eulogy, they mentioned that he loved this game, No Man's Sky, and she'd not heard of it, so I bought it for her on the Switch, and she just got fully immersed in it, and it's crazy to think that a game can do that for someone. So gaming to me is an escape from life, but in the best possible way.
Well, I'll let you escape now, and we'll close it out there, but thank you again, Stevie, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me. Oh. Sports Social Podcast Network.